So, Cameron, as we're considering this time of the year, typically there's a couple of different things that we'll see in the stores. The new year, the fall wines, you know, just because we see the grapes down in the fields getting squished and okay, and the various beers. So which one do you want to start with, the seasonal beers or the wines?
Oh, let's start with the beers.
Oh, right. Yeah. I figured that the wines will be a little bit more in depth.
Yes.
So I can recall, like, Sam Adams came out with some kind of a super duper fall, only available during a certain time, 10, 12 years ago. And a number of the others also, Budweiser, I know, has some of those products now also. What is it about seasonal beers that get people so excited?
I believe it has to do with the fact that the year is turning. It's time. You're headed into fall. There's this seasonal push. You know, it's a time for the holidays are approaching. People, it just changes everybody's mood. It's like the pumpkin spice latte. Everybody loves it when that shows up. For in my business, it's
October. You mean milkshake?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Why would you screw up? Yeah, okay. But, you know, Oktoberfest. I mean, that was a big deal, right? Remember, probably you're a little too young, but Lowen Brown, St. Pauli, that was when all of a sudden, because they were quasi-German, and that's when they kind of sold, and then they kind of went in the background a little bit, and somebody else came forward. But there's all these different flavored beers now that are also kind of in keeping with this also. Yeah. Do you see people shifting and buying these particular ones, or if they're, let's use Sam Adams as an example, if they're Sam Adams or Sam Adams, but now they'll shift over into this particular version of that, and they'll come back, but they'll still stay in the family.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with the Sam Adams idea. So here in this part of the world, what I have discovered is it's Sierra Nevada. Sierra Nevada, they've kind of got their pale ale. There's a lot of Sierra Nevada drinkers. You know, they might deviate and do a double IPA or something like that from time to time, but that pale ale is kind of their backbone beer.
That's where they start.
Right.
Yeah.
Then they will push a couple of seasonal beers. The one that I love, I mean, I just think it's spectacular. They make an Oktoberfest beer. It's only this time of year. That I think is spectacular. You can take that beer and you can put it next to any true Pilsner from the Czech Republic, from Bavaria.
The old country, so to speak.
The old country, you know, the true Pilsners, right? And you can put it next to any of those, and it is just a spectacular beer. Then they go from that through October. October's over. Then they go into another seasonal product, which is only around for Christmas time. And then that does very, very well. So it seems to be a situation where the seasons, you know, there might be about three or four different seasonal beers that come out. The staple is that pale ale. But when something new comes out, you know, people want to try that out, have a little bit of a different flavor, but then go back to what they know.
But does it cannibalize the main? Sam Adams, regular lager, boom, okay. If they're staying in the family, then I would think that those sales would dip in favor of the other rather than expanding market share. That's so I can't really wrap my head around this thing too much.
Yeah. I think you're right, because we definitely do see that. But overall, you know, that guy that comes in and gets a 12-pack of something, you know, that's the mainline product, he might come in and get a 12-pack of the seasonal product, and then he goes right back to it. So I don't. It probably cannibalizes it a tad, but nothing significant.
It's funny. I try to draw parallels with baking, okay? You know those stupid little gross candy fruit? Nobody wants them.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I you're going to get one of my stolens. And it's like people will do handstands. Can't find it. So, right. You know, you buy it when you got it, store it because, you know, that stuff doesn't go bad. I know beer does have a shelf life, but you can extend it a little bit. I'm surprised that there's not more storage of some of these seasonal beers if people really like it. It's kind of like buying a case of wine. If you really like it, buy it and set it aside. Put it, you know, somewhere where it's not going to go bad for you so you can enjoy it throughout the year rather than just this time. What about the mainline beers, you know, the Buds and the Coors and those folks? Do they kind of stay out of that as much as possible and just let the marketing kind of make their adjustments? Because you don't see as much seasonality with those beers as you do with some of the others.
They do stay away from that. I have noticed what they typically will do is they might market their can or their bottle in a different way. It'll still be the same product inside of that container, but they'll market it in a different way.
Of course, they're doing battle with the light, the ultralight, the heavy. You know, they've got their matrix. It's a little bit different. Yeah. Do any of the browns or the heavy beers do the seasonal also? I don't seem to recall.
You mean as far as, like, is there a seasonal product that's like a heavy type, yeah, like a porter or a stout or something,
right,
like that?
Right, that isn't just an import from, right, Europe that it's that way all the time.
You know, I don't see a ton of that. What I will see is, the microbrews, because they do produce. They're the ones that typically do the seasonal products, because on a micro scale or even the nano scale, right, you've got guys that love to brew beer. I mean, it's their passion. It's what they love to do. And so they kind of like to throw something new out there. Even if it does cannibalize some of their mainline product sales, I think they want to keep people intrigued. They want to keep people guessing. They want to keep people's brains and their taste buds excited about something new.
Something different, right. Yeah. And still keep it in the beer family.
Exactly.
Rather than deviating out. Now, you've got craft beers and you've got microbrews, and then you've got, you know, some of the larger regional ones who you mentioned Sierra Nevada. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a number of those that are the bigger ones. It seems to me like there's an explosion in Oregon. And I don't know if it's Deschutes that was driving that. Henry Weinhard was kind of the one number of decades ago now. Is it regional? Is craft beer or microbrews, are those regional, or are they pretty much ubiquitous now?
It's ubiquitous now. I mean, as I travel around, it's amazing to me now how I can go to just about anywhere USA. I'm not saying I'm doing a whole lot of traveling, but what I am saying is I feel like in the last few years, you can go just about anywhere in the United States, pull up to that restaurant, pull your, you know, belly up to the bar and ask for a local brew and
five.
Something is available even in the middle of, you know.
Yeah.
Washoe County, Reno, you know, or
yeah, you look around. There's no hops being grown here.
That's
it's almost like a community pride.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot.
Yeah,
which is kind of interesting, because I know a lot of the wines kind of were in there 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, the really small batch. Mm-hmm. And then the whiskeys and some of the spirits kind of moved into that niche also. But
yeah,
beer seems to have legs.
Yeah.
Is the demand coming back up for the craft beers? And I know beer kind of had waned a year or so ago before everybody got locked down. Mm-hmm. Did beer come back up?
Here, it has definitely stayed steady. So whereas during COVID lockdowns and during that period of our life, there was definitely an increase in liquor. And I'm not sure how many people were trying to drink their way into a healthier lifestyle, so to speak, and kill COVID or what.
But less calories, baby.
Could be that. But we've stayed pretty steady here. I mean, I haven't seen a big fluctuation in changes with regards to what people drink.
So your percentages are kind of consistent.
Same. Yeah. Although I really do believe last year was an anomaly entirely with regards to the numbers. It was just such a weird year. I don't think anything like that can ever be repeated.
Right, right. Do you see with ages of individuals that there are changes? Are the, we'll call them kids because it's the age of ours. Are the kids migrating into different types of alcohol? Is it beer like it was when we were going through? Is it the liquors now? Spirits, the wines? You know, I know the white wines are kind of always been there for a lot of folks, but are you seeing any subtle shifts?
The generation of the 20-somethings right now, they are drinking differently than my generation than my dad's generation. There's definitely a different desire. And it's funny, I think it has to do with calorie intake, I think. I see a lot of the younger generation, what they are drinking are ready-to-drink cocktails. So cocktails already made in a can. That's become more popular. The seltzers are definitely becoming popular with that group. And the beer, the youngest generation of drinkers, so to speak, they are not drinking beer.
They're not beers.
They're still drinking beer, don't get me wrong.
But not to the same extent.
Yeah. It's a lot of, it's wine. It's
seltzer. The wine coolers?
No. Like they'll come.
That kind of came and went pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Well,
and it's been replaced with the seltzers. So that's what I see a lot of is the new generation is definitely drinking seltzer. They're definitely drinking wine in a can, and ready to drink in a can. Like they don't want to.
You remember the jokes about wine in a box, right? Now it's wine in a can.
Yeah.
No. Let's talk a little bit about the seltzers. I suppose it sprung out of having fuzzy water. You know, it used to be just Calistoga, right, and Perrier. And then somebody started doing something different and then something different, and then it started to mainstream a little bit. And, what, 2-3 years ago, you know, the LaCroix and Waterloos and all those folks now are into it hot and heavy. Where do the seltzers come from? Any idea?
It's a mystery to me because when I was in college in the 90s, we had Zima. That came and went pretty fast.
Boy, yeah, I remember that. Was that a Coors product?
I think it might have been. You know, it was popular for about a year, and then all of a sudden it was just gone. And to me, it seems like the same product. It seems very similar. So I don't know what happened there, but I don't know where this came from. I know this much, that there is one king, if you will, of the seltzer products, and that is White Claw. I mean, it is by far and away head and shoulders over everybody else.
It's almost like a category killer.
Yeah.
In that niche. Yeah, or certainly the standard that everything gets measured against.
Yeah. Yeah, the locally, too, I do see a lot of the Eel River product, the Clarity product is sold because people here in Humboldt County do have a lot of pride with regards to their local brands.
Yeah, we're probably a little unique in that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the isolation and the small density. Yeah. You know, you go down to the Bay Area, I mean, I wouldn't imagine Santa Rosa is even thinking anybody's going to be making that in town.
Right.
Or San Francisco, where here we almost have that expectation in the rural settings. White Claw sales, I mean, what is it comparable to? Sodas? I mean, just in volume that you move?
Yeah, it's hard to compare to soda. Soda's a different, you know, it's a category.
It's a different product. I'm just thinking, you know, pallets or, you know, cases. It's got to be a player, certainly.
It's up there with the mainline beers. It's up there. I mean, it sells in volume similar
really, as much as beer.
Similar to that of like a Coors, Budweiser, you know.
The Stables.
Yeah.
The Staples, rather. Same in Eureka as in Ferndale?
No. That's something that's pretty interesting. Something I never really thought about until I had two different stores in two different communities that are really so close together. I mean, it's a 20-minute drive from Ferndale to Eureka. And two different communities, patterns with regards to just about everything. It is amazing to me how a product can sell in Eureka, just flies off the shelf. And then you go down to Ferndale, and nobody wants to touch it. It truly does happen that way.
Well, you know, at least you have the one, so if it isn't moving here, you shift it over. And
yes,
you know,
the benefits of having two stores.
Yeah, you just drive around. The truck is always full of alcohol, and people think you have a problem. Yeah, okay.
That's right. Exactly.
So is the White Claw a mover in both, or is it more of a Eureka?
Yeah, it's more. I do sell more of it in Eureka, but it does sell in both communities. I mean, the seltzers, it's here to stay. I mean, people are drinking it, and It's not my favorite beverage, but people love it. And I think it's because you can do a couple of things with it. You can drink it after, let's say you've been out on the weekend cutting firewood all weekend and you want something kind of refreshing. You can open a White Claw or a seltzer, a Clarity, and it's refreshing.
But it doesn't have a huge alcohol content to it, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah. It's about the same as beer, maybe a little less. It's kind of like having a light beer. They do make some that are a little heavier in the alcohol content, but what a lot of people then do too with that is they'll have it as their cocktail in the evenings by adding maybe a shot of vodka to it or a shot of tequila to it, something like that to really kind of...
The starter kit.
Yeah, bingo. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. For the lazy bartender in all of us.
But it's unique in that it's not a real heavy beverage. There's not a lot of calorie to it, but it does, you know, it gets the job done. It's a pretty flexible beverage. It's not my drink of choice, but it has become very, very popular.
Are there certain flavors that are selling more than others?
Yeah, there are. But I do think just like, you know, the difference between, you know, Eureka and Ferndale, it's the same. I find the same thing that happens. So, you know, Ferndale, they want to drink a little more lime flavor product, whereas Eureka maybe wants to drink a little more mango or you know, black cherry.
A little bit more fruity.
Yeah, there you go. A little fruitier.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. The avocado didn't sell real well early on either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the citrus, it just is interesting how people will respond to the different flavors. Is there one that's up and coming that you're intrigued by that is starting to get a little bit of traction or the trades are pointing to and saying, you know, this seltzer manufacturer is just, they're different and it's testing well and it's getting people's attention. Is there anything we should be looking forward to in that arena in the next 4 to 6 months?
For the longest time, everybody that was making a beer was also trying to make a seltzer. Some were good, some were bad.
Really?
And we're at a point now where that's definitely leveled off. A lot of the beer companies now are realizing, well, you know, hey, we gave it a shot. It's not our core competency. We're going to just get back to what we do best, and that's making high-quality beers and getting away from the seltzer market. So I'm sure that there are probably some new ones on the horizon. But until recently, it's been new option after new option after. Now it's they're coming back to what they're doing best, and so I think maybe a lot of places have capitulated to White Claw, and here locally, some places have probably capitulated to Clarity.
Well, and you think about it, I mean, there's still this thing called shelf space. Yeah.
Yes.
If you can expand your store fourfold, okay, yeah, bring in whatever you want. Let's put it on the shelf and see what happens. But if you've got limited shelf space, you know, the risk is going to be pretty significant to pull off something that's moving to take a shot at something else, or for one of the beer guys to pull off a brand that does have sales and put this in and just see what their consumer reaction is.
Yeah. And that is always, that's the difficult part about being a small store owner, is you get these new options constantly. And I find myself talking to a lot of sales guys about wanting to try their product, but not having the space for it, and having to tell them, okay, pull something, let's look at the numbers, pull something so that we can slide the new option in that place. You know, and you got to stay relevant. You know, that's part of it. That's part of being a small business owner, is leaning forward, staying relevant, giving the customer what they want. It's important.
Well, and is it a liquor store or is it a convenience store? Yeah. You know, do you get rid of the milk in favor of some of these new products? Mm-hmm. Or do you say, well, you know, we're still selling a pretty good amount of, you know, particularly a Ferndale kid. Yeah, that might almost be sacrilegious. You might get thrown out of town.
That's right, yeah.
But, you know, those types of choices, I mean, those are real critical choices.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how that can play out. So with the seasonals, with the seltzers, is it something, if someone has never tried it, is there a starter? You know, if you're not a big beer person, but you're kind of intrigued, which ones are most likely to be a positive experience for them or for the seltzers? Never tried it, but you're inclined to, okay, let's, you know, the kids are drinking it, got to get some for Thanksgiving or for a Halloween party. Okay, which ones do I get? You know, are there safe areas to try?
Yeah, so all of the products that we're talking about here, all of the companies are doing the same kind of thing, and it's kind of it's probably a smart way to do it because it gives people the option to try something without committing to, you know, a big dollar figure. But you can start with we sell singles at the stores in 16-ounce cans, which is really kind of that's a good option for people to try. And then if they decide, you know, this is a great flavor, I like the way that this goes down, then you can move into either six packs of different flavors, and then we've also got 12 packs that are variety packs on the different flavors. So seasonal beers do the same thing to an extent. You can get a 16-ounce can or maybe like a 20-ounce can, and then the 12-pack. You know, so you've got a safe option first, and then you can lean into your, okay, I'm committed size.
Now, this time of the year, we're normally talking about wine. Okay, unless you're going to Germany for Oktoberfest. Okay, fine, go get a brat and a little sauerkraut and, you know, yeah, have some fun. Yeah, you know, unless you're, you know, whippy like me and that's like what you like, but wine. The crushing season is upon us. A lot of neat stuff is coming out. Let's start with the whites. And I suppose just to kind of narrow it before we get into the holidays, whites and reds, you know, the two primaries. What whites are you getting excited about right now that are getting your attention? Either regional, you know, maybe the fire has been positive or the drought has been positive in certain areas for the flavors and the nuances that the whites have. What are you looking at there?
You know, I've expanded my palate a little bit with white wine. I've traditionally been more of a red wine drinker, but my wife loves white wine. So we've tried recently, we've gone through a series of these Rieslings that have been spectacular. So you've got these
just dry. Saying Riesling puts you in such a minority slot.
Yes, it does.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what Ange likes also. The Riesling is the primary white. Not the Chardonnays, because they just are a little too sweet, but Rieslings can really bring something to the table.
They can. Chardonnay, by far and away, the most popular white wine I've got. By far and away. People love Chardonnay. I think they like that buttery flavor that comes out. You know, some come off very floral, not as buttery, not as oaky. You know, with Chardonnay, there is a pretty large spectrum. But for my wife and I don't know, I don't necessarily know why, but we've been leaning heavy on the Rieslings. And there are very sweet Rieslings all the way to extremely dry and everything in between. And
it's more of a refresher. Our limited experience, the Rieslings seem to be more refreshing and not as sweet, you know, not as, so if you're looking for a light wine,
yeah,
the Riesling is really there. It's not going to really contaminate your palate. Sorry, folks, contaminate your palate like some of the others will.
Yeah. Yeah. For me right now, Rieslings, especially the dry Rieslings, my wife and I, it can be a nice, warm, you know, Indian summer day, a spectacular October. We come home after working all day. We'll crack open a bottle of Riesling, and it's refreshing. Eat that, drink that with a little bit of fruit, have maybe a few pieces of cheese, and it by itself can be its own meal. And
yeah, probably would not be recommended with hamburgers. I mean, as an example, right, for a regular guy?
Right.
Yeah, okay, that's going to, you know, not be the right match. But for the lighter cuisines or for appetizers,
yeah
why not?
But, especially how Humboldt County, we have such beautiful fall weather. And there's nothing quite as exciting for me, anyways, is to get home. That the warmth in the evening, the sun is starting to go down, to open up a bottle of wine, enjoy some fruit, some cheese, maybe some pepperoncinis, you know, something like that, and just relax, have some salami, and just enjoy that weather and sip on some wine, talk to my wife about how the day went, what's going on in your world, what's going on in my world. I love it.
So with the Rieslings, there are the traditional brands and labels that you go to. Have you found anything that's, yeah, okay, you're starting to smile. Okay, spill the beans, baby.
I have found a very unique wine. It's called Sturm. It's from Santa Cruz. What I enjoy about this Riesling is it's a well-balanced Riesling. It's not sweet, but I wouldn't say it's overly dry either. But what's very unique about it is there's no added sulfa. So it's more of a natural processed wine. It won't last as long. It's not something that you should put up on, you know, you should not put it up in your cellar. It's something that you should
drink. But you don't do that traditionally with whites anyway. No, so.
Yes, right. And what I love about it is my wife actually has a hard time with that, the added sulfates of wine that kind of help it to survive, to last. Well, her body does not like that. But these low sulfa wines agree with her and myself.
So do we have to worry about, is it 2020, 2021? What?
I've been drinking 20.
Okay.
Actually, and I think I've even been drinking the 19. Yeah. Okay. So we've tried both. They're both fantastic. So I thought the Sturm was spectacular from Santa Cruz, of all places.
Well, that's part of the fun, is discovering new small little areas that everybody else is, you know, drives by at 80 miles an hour and you're pulling in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another one. Actually, I took a chance on Moonstone Crossing.
Okay.
So they make very good wine. Local winemaker from Trinidad. I was pleasantly surprised with his Rieslings as well. I actually had somebody come to me and say, hey, I would like to try these. Can I get a couple of cases? Well, what do you want? Do you want something drier or do you want something sweeter? Because he's got the option of both. Well, you know what? Bring me in a case of each. I'll try, you know, a few bottles of each. That gave me the opportunity to try this Moonstone Crossing wine. Very nice. You know, and it's not like Humboldt County is world renowned for its winemaking, but we have some spectacular winemakers here in Humboldt County.
Dry or not dry? When you said spectacular with Moonstone Crossing.
I'm not really a sweet kind of wine drinker.
Enough said.
Anyways,
good. Okay.
I would say,
there we go.
I thought Moonstone Crossing's a drier Riesling was very nice.
Now, the folks out of Napa that are punching it out there, is there anyone there that you're looking at and you've been tickled with? See, I remember last time you said you guys go on trips.
Yeah.
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 Right now, I'm actually really excited about the Wagner family products.
Okay.
So this family makes Camus. They make Bonanza. They make a product called Quilt. I mean, they make some really nice Cabernet Sauvignons. They're very exciting. They're pricey, but they are spectacular. They also are making a Pinot Noir out of Monterey County that I think is great.
Couldn't walk away from it, could you?
I couldn't. And they make a Chardonnay that is very nice as well. So they don't have a whole lot of varietals. They don't have a ton of varietals, but what they do well. And I definitely have got to say the Wagner family of wines on the with regards to the Cabernet Sauvignons, I think they're just great.
So with the wines we've talked about now, kind of fall wines rather than for the holidays coming up, price points, typically they're reflective of something, either scarcity of product or quality of product. Where are these coming in at price-wise. You know, if somebody wants to try one of these, let's say your Santa Cruz buddies, is that a $15 bottle? Is that a $40 bottle?
Yeah, so the Santa Cruz products are going to come in about $20 to $23, $24, which is pretty typical of the products that are not commercially made, not made for volume. That seems to be a pretty typical price where you get a pretty good product.
Almost like an artisan style.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that said, too, you know, Camus, you're looking at an $85
bottle. Well, yeah, you can always go, wine. Always go over the top. Yeah. But just for a regular enjoying, not necessarily the super special occasion,
right?
Wines.
I think it's reasonable to be. I mean, it depends on the person, of course. But there are some wines out there that are in the $10 category that are great. Then, you know, you've got wines in the $20 category that are fantastic. Old Growth Cellars Chardonnay. They're a $20-ish bottle of wine, $20, $21, $22 bottle of wine. Old Growth Cellars makes a Chardonnay that is spectacular. And I would put that up against the Rombauers of the world, you know, the $35 bottles of wine.
We don't deviate. There's one only, and if I get any of the others, it's because they have been sold out.
Yeah.
I suspect that that's probably the way that a lot of folks buy their wines. It's either this one or, and I'll try to find something totally different if I need something for this evening.
Right.
Rather than settling for second best.
So Old Growth makes a red wine called Experience, and they've been out of Old Growth Experience, the OG Experience. They've been out of it for a while. It is in bottles. It is aging.
Coming back soon.
Yeah. And that is one that I get asked about a ton, is the OG Experience. But what Jim Pastore has done is, and it's brilliant, is knowing that this has become a very popular wine, he's also deviated into other varietals. So he's just introduced a Barbera, which, if you like a dry red wine in that Italian, with that kind of Italian taste, that Italian experience behind it, he's making a Barbera right now. Haven't had a chance to try it yet. I just got the case today. I am looking forward to popping open a bottle of that Barbera here real soon and testing it out, because I haven't had a chance to try it with Jimmy yet. So,
well, that's one of the things I suspect with whether it's with their product or with others, is the consistency. And do you put it all into one? For me, I'm thinking, okay, so if the experience is the one everybody's wanting, okay, I'm going to make it until you're swimming in it, rather than risking going out of that, because it's so difficult to develop that niche. Mm-hmm. When you're looking for placement on the shelf, are you looking for consistency, or are you looking for new experiences when somebody comes into either the shops?
That's a great question. It's got to be both. So you've got to have that product that you know is going to consistently sell. That's your bread and butter. That's your cash cow.
That's why folks are there.
Yeah. But at the same time, people do want to try other products. They want to have that unique experience. They want to be adventurous from time to time. They always come back to what they know. But
three of these bottles, but I'll take this one also.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So it's a gamble. You know, I've tried French wines in the store before, and it's funny. I think I can honestly say Harrison K. and Ferndale Liquors are not known for their French wines. It's just not popular in Humboldt County, I don't think.
You don't think about it.
I mean, there are times people want to come in and they want to try a good Bordeaux, so you've got to keep that on hand. But at the same time, Humboldt County
not likes, a big footprint on the floor.
No.
Yeah.
If they're going to drink a foreign wine, I think that Italian wines are very popular in Humboldt County. But people in Humboldt County love California wines.
Well, and Australian seems to be coming in also,
especially
a little
on
bit more.
The Sauvignon Blancs.
Yeah.
Australians make a very good Sauv Blanc.
I'm always curious, what happened to the Southern Hemisphere? I mean, you think about, right?
Yeah.
It logically, it would be there. Obviously, there's something very unique about.
Well, that's interesting that you bring that up. I find there is a push right now for Malbecs out of Argentina.
So we're saying Argentina and Chile, yeah.
And so I've expanded my portfolio with regards to those Malbecs. And people are giving them a shot. They like them. The other one that I've definitely seen a lot of is the Chilean Cabernet Sauvignons. They're really jammy. They've got good fruit behind them. They're very fruit forward.
Well, and grown at different heights. Mm-hmm. Things are different there also. So it's always interesting. If somebody is looking for guidance, do you train your staff to help out? Do you have little shelf talkers to give ideas? Do you have big posters somewhere that say, try this one with the arrow? Is there any of that kind of guidance that people can anticipate coming into the shops?
I definitely talk and train the staff. A lot of the staff, they tend to know about what they know. They tend to know more about what they personally like to drink, which is probably true with all of us.
Sure.
You know, it's what we like to drink, we learn about. As a person comes into the store, they should expect somebody to ask them, are they looking for anything special? You know, what are you having for dinner tonight? If you're looking for a great bottle of wine, what are you having for dinner tonight? Because that's something that I think a lot of us take for granted, is the flavor in the wine and what you're eating with dinner, those they complement each other tremendously, to the point where you can love a wine, you can love a particular varietal of wine, and if you're eating the wrong thing with that wine, it destroys it. You come away feeling like you've just been violated, because what's going on? This must be a sour bottle. It must be corked. It's got to be bad. A lot of times it's what you're pairing with that wine.
Which means try it before dinner.
Try it before dinner. Yeah.
Now, I did notice before we leave wines, Gewürztraminer was not mentioned. But there are some that are available and some that aren't available. We had that little experience in the middle of the summertime. Had something at a restaurant, and you said it was a small batch wine club, something like that. It was very limited and just wasn't available. Does that often come into play, or is that just happenstance that popped up that time?
It does happen. I am a big part of what's going on right now with imports. Is there are a lot of ships sitting off the coast, so we are having a hard time getting certain things, especially those coming from Europe. So certain varietals that are traditional in certain parts of the world, they have been a little harder to come by. I mean, it's just as simple as the supply chain got narrowed because of things that have happened in the past, and so we're playing catch up.
Yeah, jacked up is a good phrase.
Jacked, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
yeah, not hijacked, jacked up. Okay. So, a lot of cool stuff. If you want to spend a little bit of time, feel free to wander the store.
Absolutely.
Just stay away from the sodas if you're looking for the wines.
That's right. Yeah.
And the White Claws.